Chatting with the greatest minds in Bitcoin. This is a Bitcoin Audible chat with Adam Curry. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. We've got a fantastic chat today. It's taken me a long time to get this together, but I think you guys are going to love it. I had the podfather, the inventor of podcasting himself, Adam Curry, on the show today, and we had a fantastic conversation. We get into the Great Reset, the rise and the problems of social media, how he's a big Bitcoin enthusiast and a major Lightning user. And honestly, the level of conversation was really surprising. I did not know how well and how comfortable he was with Lightning, but they have been building a really cool project over at podcastindex.org and podcasterwallet.com to integrate Lightning into podcasting. And he is on a mission to reinvent his own invention, to reinvent podcasting and re-decentralize the sphere with the coming or the growth and centralization around Spotify and the attempt at building these walled gardens back into the open podcasting platform. And who better to take the reins and try to pull it to the other direction than the Podfather himself? So we had a fantastic conversation. And real quick, before we get into it, I just want to thank our sponsors. A thank you to Hexa Wallet. It's a great mobile wallet with tons of features, and it is a seedless wallet with a really clever breaking up the backup system, so it's in multiple places, so you don't have to worry about losing your phone. And I actually just recently got to do the restore from backup, and it's pretty great. So check them out at Hexa Wallet. You can find it at guyswan.com, and that's Swan with two N's, guyswan.com/hexa, and it will take you right there. And our other wonderful sponsor is Shift Crypto, and they have a fantastic hardware wallet, one that I am increasingly in love with the more I use it. It is called the Bitbox O2. They have a Bitcoin-only version. It is open source. It is sleek. And it is literally just exactly what you need and nothing more for a solid Bitcoin cold storage. That's the Bitbox O2. And to get there, you go to guyswan.com/bitbox. So if you're looking for good places to store your Bitcoin, you got a great mobile wallet in Hexa and a wonderful hardware wallet in Bitbox. So thanks to those guys for supporting Bitcoin Audible. Let's go ahead and get into today's chat with Adam Curry, the Great Reset versus the Great Awakening.
Let's go, man. I'm ready.
Love it. First and foremost, thanks for coming on the show.
Of course. My pleasure.
Yeah, dude. It's kind of amazing, like this industry that I'm trying to be a part of and do something in. You are said inventor of it, basically, and a big fan of like what you're building, what you're trying to do, your show, like everything. It's just really amazing to actually get to sit down and talk with you about all this stuff, because the world's a bit of a crazy place right now, and you always have a brilliantly fascinating opinion on it. So,
well, what's interesting, Guy, and thank you very much for inviting me on the podcast. You know, out of every weird period in time, we've had some great art. Vietnam had protest songs, but you know, you can go back to every conflict, even the bubonic plague. You know, people emerged from that differently, and you know, I would say Renaissance, all these things take place in cycles throughout history. And although I understand software development quite well, and mm-hmm. I've run software development teams, I'm not a coder by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, go to, you know, 10 print, I love you, go to 10, you know, that kind of stuff is where I'm at. But I consider code to be, software development to be a science and an art. And I think what's happening in this period, it seems like Bitcoin really took a turn. Everybody was obviously kind of confined. You know, what are you going to do? What are developers going to do? Oh, well, I guess I'll just do what I always do, only I'll do it at home. and lo and behold, we're getting all kinds of beautiful things. And you're a part of that. I'm a part of that. We're a part of, I won't even say it's an industry, really. It's more like a movement. And to me, what's really fascinating is, when you think about it, podcasting was developed and created right after 9/11, when the world was also in incredible turmoil. We actually, the enclosure tag was pre 9/11. That started with the with the Dave Weiner's RSS Radio Userland product that he had. But after 9/11, when I saw the first iPod, that's when podcasting really came to be. So you have these periods in time where I think creativity and thinking changes and morphs, and it's so analogous to back then when we were developing podcasting to now see, because I just kind of jumped into the Bitcoin community by saying, oh, here's an implementation. I don't know shit all about anything, but I got money flowing and that seems to be cool. And, and immediately I recently went to the Austin Bitcoin meetup, you get welcomed and I can just see that it's very much the same vibe. And I'm delighted. I mean, I get to do two of these in my lifetime. This is great.
it's really interesting about that. The whole idea of, hard times create good men, but like also hard times create good things. They create brilliant ideas. They really do. Like, I think there's kind of a stagnancy when there's no pressure to do something. Like, there's something about like the state or the idea of being human that really needs a goal, needs something to fix, needs something broken so that we have a direction to point in.
Yeah, we're walking solutions, looking for problems as we go throughout life. And really, no, never mind. We'll come back to that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Minor brain fart. I was going to go off on a whole tangent. Like, no, let's not do that.
So you've been around for longer than me and have a longer time span for the perspective of what the hell is going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, last year or two, like we got COVID, the whole Trump phenomenon, the Great Reset, we got lockdowns, an absolutely insane banking crisis, global banking crisis, mm-hmm. negative mm-hmm. interest rates on freaking $18 trillion.
Woohoo, it's a party.
Banning cash.
Well, this is the point. This is not yeah. you. I'm going to take us right to it.
Okay.
So what did we lose during this? Or what did we discover we might have already lost? But what became very, very apparent in these past 8-9 months? First of all, we have no news media. Now, I've known this for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
But it's quite obvious that advertisers are in control of our media. Most of the media is owned by foreign entities. In this case, turns out to be mostly China. It is entertainment. It is not meant to bring you news. And I think that even the most skeptical among us, when I started the No Agenda podcast 13 years ago, and people righteously called me the crackpot, a moniker I wear with great pride, because
earned.
No CIA agent needs to knock off the crackpot. Yeah, the crackpot. Everybody knows it. Who gives a shit what he thinks? But we lost our media, and it was already, kind of gone probably even before you and I were born, if you think about it. I've done so much research on that. I can back that up, but it's all messaging. It's all a messaging platform, and it's the elite messaging system. At least that's what the older media was, and the internet, of course, came in. So I think we realize that we've lost our media. The other thing we lost is our money. That went away the minute we saw the dirty, dirty Chinese money getting cleaned at the bank in Shanghai. Oh, we've got to disinfect the money. And the whole world went, that's all right. I got my credit cards. I got my Venmo. I got whatever. And people are about to wake up to what that really means. And so, man, I'll just say the other side, those guys are not bashful. The Great Reset, it's not like hidden. It's in your face with dreams, videos, and this is your future. I mean, this is truly, truly crazy.
It's a bit shocking how, like, you know, I really try to step back and, like, not believe in the whole conspiracy theorist. Oh, there's, like, some institution. Like, I don't really believe in omnipotence, whether it's a government institution or a corporation or whatever. Like, I think there's just a massive amount of incompetence and maliciousness through ignorance. And when incentives are wrong, things just kind of go in one direction. But this Great Reset stuff has been so out in the open and so broad that it really just makes me go, like, what the fuck? Like, how could that be so prevalent? Excuse me. How could that be so prevalent if there wasn't some kind of general plan that a very large number of powerful people were basically on board with? You know what I mean?
Yes. And I believe it may not save President Trump's re-election and presidency, but I believe we will, in the next 5 years, come hell or high water. And honestly, I almost would say having Joe Biden and Kamala Harris persevere and take the Oval Office, that might actually be better, because we are going to it'll be a necessity for us to learn exactly how big these networks of criminality really, how big they really are. And even at a micro level, you know, a couple of years ago, I had a tax audit, and, you know, there was a write-off of a trailer that I used for my podcast on tours. And, you know, I'd slept in it two nights in Yosemite that wasn't a podcast. And so they refused to let me write it all off. And that was I had to pay back $70,000. And, you know, when I really looked into it, you know, I was absolutely in my right standing, but it would take me $150,000 to mount a lawsuit. And that's the difference, you know, in America, at least.
That seems sensible. And
there are two tiers, you know, there's two tiers of justice. And so everyone is starting to awaken to that. And when I think what we'll learn about our idiotic belief that it's smart to go to an ATM that doesn't process your money, but processes your vote and doesn't give you a paper receipt. I mean, these are all things that we're going to go, holy crap, how could we have been so dumb? We left the door wide open. You know, Wall Street is for criminals. It's, you know, look at the HSBC money laundering, Mexican drug cartels laundering money through the bank. And they got caught, and then no one went to jail.
And nothing happened. No. Nothing happened.
And who was on the board of directors then? James Comey. Exactly. So these names keep popping up everywhere, you know. It's like, yeah. And it's really only a few, but the network of, yeah, it's you know, it used to be called the old boys network. It's existed forever. There's always been backroom deals, but now that a large enough percentage of the population has figured out that no, the internet is not Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. There's, you can type in a different address and go somewhere else. And you can use the Fediverse, the Mastodon infrastructure, and have your own social network free of any tinkering or algos, etc. You can have an open and distributed content distribution platform that doesn't need a big player to make it work or to monetize it. You know, yeah. And the monetization part is what really, really got me, because I know that I'm uncancelable with my podcast because there's no advertising, and advertising is censorship. It's just the bottom line. Whether you're advertising for a Bitcoin company and don't want to talk about the competitor, I mean, you're self-censoring. There's always some form of censorship, but more likely what we see today in the cancel culture is advertisers don't want controversy, and people who stir up controversy, they immediately tag the advertiser, and the advertiser pulls out. It's that simple. So yeah. Companies that survive on advertising, which is pretty much all the big Silicon Valley companies, big tech, they just preempt any controversy by removing it. Further down the line, though, now is what we're finding out, is it becomes kind of freaky when pressure can force a company like Apple, who does not have an advertising model, to remove podcasts from their index, or PayPal and subsequently MasterCard, their payment processor, to literally deplatform people from using that. So that is my weakness, and necessity is always the mother of invention. You know, I wanted to broadcast 16 years ago, and podcasting came out of it. And now I wouldn't mind if I could continue to receive value back for the value I produce. And in this case, we kind of got lucky and we leapfrogged over a whole bunch of crap, and we can move right into a true value for value system where people give back what they get out of it. And it's not your traditional sale, where there's a digital asset you can't unlock until you pay me. Although it could be that, but I've learned that in order for enough payments to scale over enough shows, we have to have a real per minute voluntary model, which is basically what we started with Value for Value over 10 years ago, what Patreon picked up. You know, Patreon, I think, is very successful, but then they started to deplatform people for behavior elsewhere, not even on their own platform.
I hate being dependent on Patreon. Like I love
anybody,
it.
Anybody, my friend, being dependent upon anybody. This,
but it sucks.
I mean, I only got.
And they're charging like sales tax or some crap. Oh, no,
well,
right?
Well, your fees are between 7% and 9% at the end of the day. So it's way too high.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got fully noted here at the house, got me a Raspberry Blitz, you know, fired that sucker up. You know, I was like, hey, this is pretty easy. I can probably figure this out. All of a sudden I understood the feeling. So, oh, wait a minute. My bank is right up there in that room. If someone steals it, tries to reboot it, it won't unlock. It can get destroyed in a fire. I have, you know, I have my phrases in my head, which one of the main, you got to have those.
Best way to store them.
And I practice them from time to time. Yeah. You know, simple memory exercise. So, you know, it could get smashed, it could get blown up. You know, the worst that could happen is I could lose a few sats on some channels that weren't backed up. But that is a great feeling. And I've actually been deplatformed by banks. And I've had my assets frozen by the government. And fuck, that's a badass position to be.
Yeah.
Really, really bad. It's a horrible feeling. Of course, you can overcome these things very easily, but the feeling that someone had that power over you to just say, you know what? No, you get nothing out of the ATM today. I got that in the 90s, I got that. It was a mistake at that time, but holy crap, that felt really, really, you feel powerless.
It was just random?
This is back in the day of the savings and loan mortgage scandals, and they were already selling and swapping mortgages. And so someone else cashed my mortgage check, some other bank, which is not the right bank. So I had a cash check from a different bank than the one that, you know, held the note. And so the third bank down the line had apparently tried to reach out to me, never gotten a hold of me. And so they just froze all my assets. And the way it worked back then is, you know, I went to the ATM in the morning on my way to MTV. And it was like, no, nothing. I go inside. They say, yeah, well, it's weird. All your money's been transferred to this other account with all nines. I've never seen that before. And then, you know, then a little investigation, like, holy crap, what's going on here? So that was the banking industry that had frozen it. Not even a government institution.
That's an eye opener.
Uh-huh.
There is really something. I don't know if it's like a, I guess empowering really is the word, but just comforting and a little bit crazy that, like, when, you know, I have like somebody's like, you know, send me an invoice, or like I'm trying to do some sort of payment thing, or man, I want to, you know, try to add something new to the website. Like maybe I could just get somebody to code this up. Like I just go to my setup, like I go to BTC Pay server and like, I just figure out how to integrate with that. And I use that, and I can have all sorts of stores and everything. Like, I'm trying to do an invoice before, like I go to bill.com and like law, like, you know, like it's all just like something else, which is some interface which requires a fee that's in front of some other company that then goes to my bank. You know what I mean? Like it's always like three layers of crap. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody is looking at it. Nobody is asking me anything. I don't have permission. If for some reason I don't log in because their servers are down or something, it's irrelevant to me. Like I've got it. Like it's right here. I can just unplug the computer and plug it back in and go, you know?
Right, right.
It's really nuts to think that like my whole banking and payments thing is just
right here in the house. What Bitcoin has proven is, and this to me is probably the bigger picture, that you can have an agreement with someone that can be settled with someone you don't know and have no idea who they are. That this can cryptographically, we can assure that this very valuable thing I have over here was transferred to that person and received as the same valuable thing. And, you know, we had a handshake agreement as to how that should happen, you know, a digital handshake. Mm-hmm. This negates the need for, well, obviously banks, the entire finance, and that's really what runs most of the world is the financial interchange. But lawyers, the first thing I'm looking at with podcasts is the entire PRO and publishing system, the public rights organizations, ASCAP, BMI, who have offices throughout the whole world. They're tracking, scanning, very, very inaccurate, very archaic infrastructure, although they think it's very modern, to track how many times a record has been used or song has been used or played on the radio or whatever, played in clubs. And they kind of, take it averages and they collect money from people who use that music and then they distribute it. And, it can take 2 to 5 to infinity years to get your money down the line. And whereas, what we're doing with the Lightning payments for podcasting is from the get-go, we enable a split between any number of people responsible for the product. So when you're listening to a podcast in a podcasting 2.0 app or player, it sends a set amount of Satoshis per minute down the line to everybody who was responsible for getting that to the listener. So 1% of that is to the app you're using, 1% is to the index to keep everything running, and 98% goes to the podcaster, who then can split it in an infinite number of ways. I want 20% for myself, 20% for my co-host, I want 20% for my investor. What do I have left? 40%. I want to have I might have a freelance writer, he's going to get 5% or she's going to get 5%. There's some person who's great at promoting the podcast. I want to hit them up for a bit, give them 5%. And so that'll happen of every single payment that comes down the line. And the listener can determine how much per hour that's worth to them. And, we're just basing it on the assumption that people value a podcast at minimum at $1 an hour. So you're talking 100 sats a minute, basically. And you just took away an entire infrastructure to get these types of royalty payments to people, and all the fucking money that gets caught on the gets caught along the way and sticks to other people's walls. That is revolutionary. And we're taking it one step further, where there's a group of guys who have the podcast taxonomy project. And so they've broken down all the different, kind of like on a movie, if you look at the credits, that's not accidental, the placement or the names. So all the way from star, guest star, gaffer, best boy, assistant to the hairdresser, all that stuff is codified. We'll have that for podcasting. And then those will be official credits in a credit tag, which you can search upon. But then you can also assign value blocks or node IDs, if you will, to those people. So at an episode level, we'll be able to create those royalty splits for anybody who participated at an episode level. So you're playing episode 1,297 of the No Agenda Show. Darren O'Neill did the artwork. We're going to give him 5%. Of that show's revenue that comes in through streaming Lightning. This is
God, that's amazing.
It goes beyond, I mean, it's breaking so many things. It really is. Yeah. And you just start with that. And the beauty of podcasting in this case is it's an automatic marketing machine. You know, it's like if you have a podcast, you have an audience, you have 10 people, those 10 people probably listen to at least one or two other shows. Mm-hmm. If their other favorite podcasts don't have this enabled, they'll contact that podcaster and say, hey, you should do this. It's real easy. You go to podcasterwallet.com. Boom. You're enabled if you have a node ID. That podcaster in turn tells their audience listens to other stuff, and it just builds very quickly. I've seen this feature rollout go very fast with podcasting. So I expect this, once we get a couple apps in the App Store that don't need to be they don't need to be fully connected nodes. So for a podcast app, okay, you only need Keysend outbound. So you don't need to be on, you can use Neutrino wallet, I guess, because you can just use that on mobile. It syncs up when you load it up. And then when you're listening, it'll be connected and can send the payments real time. So that type of app scales to whatever we need to scale it to. That's coming. And when that happens, I think, you know, it's going to explode. And the code will be there for people to implement it into their own apps. So I think it'll go pretty quick.
That's awesome. I really think one of the interesting things about, like, because Sphinx is, you know, like where everybody has, it was funny, like I didn't even know that you had dropped the episode about it until, like, I was just looking at my Sphinx and all the groups I was in. It was just like, Bobby jumped into group, Kaiser jumped into group, like, and I'm like, wait, what the hell is going on? It's like, it just started to be this flood of people in all my Sphinx groups. And then I was like, wait a second, did Adam drop his episode on this?
I'm going to show you, this is a Zap wallet. This is the log for the podcast index. And if you can see that, you'll see.
Wait, you have the Zap connected to your, are you running Sphinx locally, like the one that
this is
connecting it to your node?
So this is the podcast index node. It's independent. It's a voltage.io node. But so 1% of everything that's happening on Sphinx is coming into the index node. That's our royalty, if you will, for keeping it running. So that's typically 3 satoshis. And you can see that every minute of the day, there's satoshis coming in. Now, if I'm a podcaster, these numbers are going to be much, much bigger. Look at that shit, man. It just goes on forever. And so this is, now, what have we in 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks of having Sphinx set up, you know, the podcast index on its royalty alone has made probably about $25 in Lightning payments. So imagine that's the 1%.
Yeah.
So imagine we can amplify this or multiply it by 100 or by 1,000. Then now it starts to get interesting for everybody, including podcast app and wallet developers. I mean, wallets are great, but what does a wallet do? You know, I see a lot of wallets. My phone is filled with wallets. The phone gets hot sometimes because the wallets are doing stuff. The battery goes down. But you can really only send from wallet A to wallet B. Some have, you know, easier onboarding for fiat. Others have a marketplace, you know, where you can go get gift cards and inbound liquidity. And, you know, but what can you really do with it? But point of sale, everyone has a point of sale interface. And now, well, just add podcasting. We have the API, it's there. You don't need to run a huge infrastructure. We do that. That's what podcastindex.org is all about, so that we can enable people to create great podcast experiences and finally be in the deal flow. App guys were always cut out. They're not a part of the ad buy. They have to sell their hard sweat labor for 99 cents in the App Store. That's fucking insulting.
Dude, that is one of those things. There's so many middlemen that are taking percents of like what's going on, which I don't think they should be the ones. Like, they're middlemen that seem unnecessary, that like shouldn't be there. Whereas somebody like who is actually in the podcast app, I would love to pay Overcast, you know, like a 1% or 2% of mm-hmm. everything that I listen to
sure.
for making Overcast, keeping it up and yep. making it work and adding features and doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They basically deserve to be some sort of a middleman or like in on the cut, mm-hmm. like for the people, the number of people and the number of hours that they make yeah. useful and like yeah. Entertaining for people.
Exactly.
And they didn't. You know, they never did.
Well, they were never in the deal. They were never a part of the deal flow. And that, and I'll take that as my bad. Because when we develop podcasting, I didn't have to think about, well, in general, as a broadcaster, I never had to think about radios. There's always radios, right? Everyone's got a radio. You got a radio in the car. You got a transistor radio. You got yeah. a boombox. Everyone has a radio. What's your problem? We don't need radios. But today's apps are literally radios. And we see, well, we were seeing a quick diminishing of apps. We were seeing apps that were tied to the Apple Index, which, although they've been great stewards of podcasting, they have their own agendas. And so they, we don't know how many people they reject from their index, but we certainly know when they take them out, and that happens. So when you take Joe Rogan out because he goes voluntarily, or you take Alex Jones out because he didn't fit Apple's corporate image, either way, the app guys get screwed. Those are popular mm-hmm. shows. And so all of a sudden, why would I use this app when the two shows I like, as an example, are not available? Then you're going to pick up a newer radio, and that became Spotify. And I'm like, fuck those guys. No, no, seriously. That's why I step back into this. I'm like, what is going on? Where are the leaders in our space? And for a whole bunch of reasons, it's been pretty stagnant for a decade, kind of a chicken and the egg, people waiting for someone else to do something with very little money to play with in between. So hosting companies that, you know, host your podcast and basically create the RSS feed, which is the main meat and potatoes of what you need to be a podcaster. They're running really lean. You know, they can't just throw development resources at everything that might look promising without a use case or a business case. And so I decided, since I have nothing to lose and I know how to raise money, which we've done successfully and continue to do for Podcast Index, because it's what it is, a value for value company. We don't charge anybody anything outright. We ask for value. So that's going to be both from people who support the idea, and many developers have actually given us money. Say, hey, thanks. You know, I could pay per API access over here, but I'd rather give you guys $50, or here's $20 a month. Keep at least one of your 25 servers running. That's now you're talking some true value for value. If anyone comes out of this a Silicon Valley billionaire, then we fucked it up. So hopefully it'll be a little more evenly distributed, but there should be enough. There should be more than enough for everybody.
Yeah. Break down, give me a little bit on, particularly for the audience. I know I've got a lot of new people who are kind of fresh on a lot of these terms and the technicals of this. Give me a breakdown of the stack in the podcasting setup, like the RSS feed, like where the actual audio is stored, the app, like where in that whole stack do the payments land?
Okay.
Like,
okay. That's yeah. a good question. So the RSS infrastructure is essentially the same as it's always been. It's completely decentralized, where every individual has to publish two things to have a podcast. One is at least a media file. I'll just say MP3 to make it easy, but it could be video, and an RSS feed. And the RSS feed is just an XML feed that is a control and organization representation of your show. So it has episodes listed in there, and each episode has details about the episode. And the episode details are where the file lives, if there's a web page for it, could be specific artwork for that episode. So you have a few very basic set things. And as long as you have that and people have a way to find your feed, then a podcast app can subscribe to it. When Apple came into the mix, they created kind of the special iTunes at the time, one-click subscribe, which was what was necessary because we didn't have a central place. And, you know, obviously smaller apps were able to subscribe to feeds if you just copy and pasted it in. But running an index of feeds is a gargantuan job because, as it turns out, when you have a decentralized system with RSS feeds, everyone does their RSS feed just a little bit differently. So the number of exceptions are outrageous. And there's also a lot of human error. Like, oh, here's artwork for this image. It's 10 megabytes. So now you get to the point where you have a little phone that is doing all that aggregating and looking at feeds. And then you say, I want to play, you know, the Bitcoin Audible podcast. And it has to wait. It has to download 10 megabytes of image just to display it. You see where the shortcomings in the experience start to crop up. Yeah. So this is why an index was needed. And our idea was our index is immutable. I mean, it will be immutable eventually, either on IPFS or, you know, some other form of open ledger. Who the hell knows? Something will pop up.
I'm waiting for that Lightning solution, honestly.
Well, it's something's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. So we just want to make sure we have the collection with everything in it. So to make it easier for these apps, instead of them maintaining and always having to parse these fees, which can get quite large, and you know your experience is going to be limited if your phone is doing all of that work. So the index delivers an API and does all that work under the hood. So the podcast index is an abstraction of the actual infrastructure of podcasting, which is just a whole bunch of RSS feeds and MP3 files all over the world on all kinds of servers and devices that are just waiting to serve that information up. So the index creates a reliable place for developers to quickly create a podcast app, a podcast experience, or to experiment or to do whatever by offering all of this as an API. So pretty much everybody, except interestingly Overcast, there are a couple others who run their own databases and their own indexes. But obviously our mission is to preserve podcasting as a platform of free speech. So we just want to enable other people to do this. And, you know, whatever they do is whatever they do. So since we have this index, we can bootstrap new features. So it started with chapters as an example. So chapters typically were only baked into the file and presented that way to the app. We now have that as a part of the new namespace, which merges into the podcast RSS spec and system that enables not just chapters to exist outside of the actual file itself, but you could even have that centralized so through a service where it can be community chapters, and you can add a chapter from any podcast app, and that change will be reflected on every other podcast app. So these are very big changes, but they don't really change anyone. You know, it's completely backwards compatible. So it's on top of everything else. So if you have the standard RSS feed, the namespace comes in and has basically a description of all the new features. So if someone wants to support that in their app, they just have to look at that additional spec and they can implement it. And if they don't,
it's just ignored.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it should be. That's exactly the way
it's soft forked.
Exactly the way it was designed. So we added the value tag to the new namespace, and that's all it is. So all you need to have in your feed, in addition to what you already do, is you'll have a value block. So instead of image, it'll say value. Instead of a URL to an image file, you can put any number of node IDs in there, the form of payment, which would be Lightning, and the split. So, you know, so this person gets X percent, this person gets X percent. So when the podcast app, which is enabled with Lightning and a wallet, when it reads that from the database, from the podcastindex.org, or alternatively from the podcaster's feed, because that's still, you know, that still works. We are backwards compatible 16 years. Then the app knows, okay, every minute someone listens to a podcast or this podcast, we send payment in these splits, this total amount to these different wallet addresses. So there's literally no one in between the person who is enjoying the product and the person who did the artwork for that product. They don't have to know each other, but the artist will still get his or her 5% for listening to that episode of every payment that the listener makes. I mean, it's a beautiful system.
Yeah.
Does that explain the stack kind of how it fits? Yeah. Okay.
I think I'm getting, I'm trying to figure out too, how to, like how I would integrate this myself. Cause if it's like something that, you know, if you're adding this thing into the RSS feed, like I'm hosting right now with Anchor, which kind of gets me trapped in the Spotify bubble in a way. And I love it as a service, but I have to admit, I've been a little bit increasingly scared of the last 6 months that I'm very dependent on them. Mm-hmm. And I've got 560 freaking episodes or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if I have to move platforms, like all my links break, you know, like I've got a really interesting headache to deal with.
Now does Anchor have a 301, I think 302 forward that you can enable on your feed? Do they allow for that?
Possibly.
Because is your feed your Anchor feed, or do you have it mapped to a domain name?
It's an Anchor feed.
Right. Okay.
What I'm trying to figure out right now is if I switch, because I use their embed for their basic embedding for my website. And I don't know if I'll have to update that embed or if that will, I'll actually be able to forward that to a different location.
I guarantee you stuff's going to break. It always does. Stuff's going to break.
Yeah.
But the good news is for the namespaces in podcasting 2.0, you can literally go to podcasterwallet.com. You can enter the email address that's listed as the feed owner in your RSS feed. You enter your feed and that corresponding email address, you'll get an email, you verify, and we will put your node ID into the podcast index database. So you will in effect be enabled the minute you go through that process.
Okay. All right.
So that's all it takes. And then any app that talks to the, so you can go to Sphinx right after that and set up a tribe and put your RSS feed in there and it's good. And it will go to the node ID that you specified.
So interesting. So like you're actually like, so from your side, you modify Podcast Index will actually modify the RSS feed for me.
No.
Like to deal with this or no. Allow me to. Okay.
No, we give you the actual data you should put in your RSS feed, which on Anchor is not possible.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Or at least not yet, but to bootstrap everything so that we don't have to wait for Anchor. It's in the database. So Sphinx, when they load up a podcast tribe, they don't read the RSS. They can, but they don't have to. That's why podcastindex.org exists. So they just ping us and it says, here's the episodes, here's the art, here's the value block. Yeah. For your own protection, of course, you should pressure Anchor or find a way to move to a host that, yeah. So Buzzsprout right now is the one that'll be out of the gate earliest. They already support I think all of the new namespace tags, and they'll be supporting new ones moving forward. And others will follow because exactly what you're saying, people will start moving to places like Buzzsprout because they want the cool shit.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I'll tell you what I would really love to do to get a pseudo, quote unquote, a pseudo free hosting option, which I just stumbled upon this, something called Shock Wallet, which allows BitTorrent tipping. Mm-hmm. Is like because all of these tools really exist. It's just a matter of like kind of wrapping them into a container that speaks to all of them at once. But if you could have a way to split the fee of listening to whoever is hosting it, and host it with the BitTorrent. Like I would just, you know, host it myself on my home computer, which I couldn't deal with everybody downloading, but I could deal with a couple of seeds and, you know, seed to somebody else,
right.
And then have my close listeners in the Sphinx tribe or, you know, wherever, who also be like, all right, well, I'll host too. And I'll give you you know, 5% of everything that anybody downloads from me or from you.
That's IPFS. You know, that's what IPFS exactly. With Filecoin. I don't know much about Filecoin. I'm more interested in Bitcoin than any other coin. But I see that integration coming. That's not going to be too hard. So, but also there's LSAT, which is another part of the Lightning protocol, which allows you to charge millisats for API access. You know, so there's a lot of really interesting things that are coming, and it just comes down to something that a lot of people have to relearn. What is value? What is something worth to me? It's been so overinflated with clothes and entertainment. You know, it's like, is it really that valuable to you? You know, what are the things that you really value? And also, you know, everyone's value is different based upon their own personal circumstances. So people, actually it was Paul Itoi from Sphinx Chat I've had great conversations with him. He's a very visionary guy, and I'm so happy we found each other. He said, you know, the days of free are over, and we now come to realize that free is very expensive because you lose your privacy. You lose your own free will to a degree as algorithms are sending you left and right, whether you think you can fight them or not. What you see is all you know. And that's been a very expensive lesson. And I think people are, what I've seen with the Fediverse and Mastodon servers is people enjoy the experience when it's free of algos. You know, it's like, oh, this is kind of a peaceful experience. I don't feel all jittery about being on it because there's likes and noises and blips and bloops flying all the time, which in the big tech world are timed. You know, if you... Mm-hmm. You log into Twitter, you're going to see I have this many mentions, and you look at that. And then if it looks like you're not scrolling anymore, you'll all of a sudden get four more notifications. So they hold that shit back to throw it at you when you seem inactive and draw you back into the app. So these are things that non-algoed, you know, that's all sorcery, man. That's messing with your brain. That's and you don't know it. So why would you even think it's ever happening? So that it brings such a sense of peace and normalcy to your world when you discover that, hey, we can have a great experience and actually a much richer experience when there's not this unseen third hand trying to manage something to their benefit in our human discourse.
Yeah. It's amazing how powerful that conditioning is to like push the notification at like a certain time and basically reinforce that charge or the emotional thing.
Or reinforce certain posts with certain messages, like wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And to blatantly subvert messages that you don't like, or that the owner of said platform doesn't like. I mean, these are all, and actually I watched the whole testimony of the Senate hearing with Zuckerberg and Dorsey, and you know Zuckerberg is clearly an android of Chinese manufacture.
I was about to say a robot, man.
Yeah, obviously. But Dorsey, he said something that most people missed, and I thought was really good. He said, because he now first of all, he's clearly got some vision because you know Lightning is here in no small part thanks to him.
Yeah,
and Lightning Labs and you know, fantastic work they're doing, and you know they are really. I mean, Ryan Gentry is a paid evangelist, man. It's like
I'm trying to get him on the show. I freaking love that guy.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he was showing off what we're doing more to anybody than me. He's like, look at this. Hey, check this out. He's like, Dorsey, at one point said, you know, I think that because you know they're talking about algorithms and how they shadow ban, etc. And he said, well, I'd like to, in the future, have, you know, people can choose from algorithms. And I kind of like that idea. Like, I choose the make me angry drug. I choose the make me happy drug. And, you know, because that's truly what it is. We know, it's not a secret that these machines are very effective at releasing dopamine and giving you, charging you for good or for bad. And it would be interesting if you can indeed just purchase that experience like a drug. And at the same time, I think he also understands that that is the future. The future is how is the information presented? Because, I mean, really, is a social network any different than email under the hood? Really? I mean, not really. You know, forums are groups, groups are forums, everything is email. You know, it's all kind of the same idea. Podcasting is just another email, the way most of the clients have been built. Mm-hmm. Here's an inbox, and here's the new letters I have from that person. He understands that federating is the future. And mm-hmm. right now we're federating through PubSub, which is or WebPub, which is kind of the ping notification now of Web 2.0. So, you know, you can, again, even that works a bit like an inbox. You can subscribe to mentions of you on the central system, of which there are different in and out points. But clearly, Sphinx Chat is showing us the future of networking is blockchain enabled. I mean, that's, and it'll cost you money. It'll cost you a millisat or whatever it'll cost you. That is not the only way, but I think it is the most effective method to prevent spam. You know, it should cost, and this is not a new idea, except we never had the millisats. We could never go down to a millionth of the coin and say, hey, if you want to send email to me, it's a millisat. But I'll charge you 1,001 millisats. And after I determine that you're not spam or whatever, or after X amount of time, then you get your 1,000 sats back or millisats, and I keep my 1 millisat. See, so that's gonna be an automatic fraud preventer, because yeah. It'll just become too expensive to be spamming all these people. The return on investment won't be there. So yeah. That's what's coming. That is abundantly clear to me.
Let's take a quick break and talk about our sponsor for today's episode of Bitcoin Audible, and that is Hexa Wallet. I talk about this being a seedless wallet and how you can break your seed up into pieces, and you can use contacts and different like cloud drive storage things for your different pieces so that you don't have to worry about it. Well, I actually finally got to experience the recovery process, and I got to admit, it was pretty awesome. It was pretty sleek. I used one of my contacts to have them help me recover my keys after I restored two parts of my own, doing it as if I had lost my phone in this scenario, and sure enough, got it all right back. It's a really cool backup process, and they've got a lot of other great features, including custom fees, batching transaction among multiple contacts and locations so that you can save on fees, and just so many other great things to explore. It's a wonderful beta wallet that's going to have a lot of new things added as they continue development, and it is a great one to check out. You can get it at guyswan.com/hexa, H-E-X-A, and that'll take you right there. All right, so let's get back into it. Yeah, the number of things that you can do with this as soon as you just kind of open the idea of, like, it's kind of crazy that this wasn't possible. It's like, it's all electronic anyway. It seems insane that, like, even with middlemen, none of this got implemented. You know, it seems like you would be able to do this on something like Cash App, and yet somehow for two decades, like, it was still nobody built these tools. But to have a universal language to do this, and like this, an entirely new network infrastructure that's bootstrapping at the base when there's only 100 people here, and like, we've already got like people like you and Paul and like all these people like working to build these tools and create an entirely new environment mm-hmm. for something that's 20 years old mm-hmm. is so freaking exciting. You see just how massive the potential is. It's like we finally get to catch up on what we should have been building for the last 20 years. You know
well,
what I mean?
Yes and no. Things. One, we're up against some of the most powerful forces of nature, my friend. If you've ever seen the movie Network, which is...
with Bullock from...
Network has the famous speech, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. But there's another part where this newscaster, Howard Beale, is read the Riot Act by the true owner of the world. who really run him and run all the media and run all the stations. And, you know, he says, look, there's only one way of the world, and it is the almighty dollar. And this is how it works. And you have your place in it, or the machine will fucking crunch you up. And that machine is what we see everywhere around us. It is the media machine. It is the political machine, and is all a foundation of the financial machine. So there is a lot of power against everything that we're doing. Now, I don't think it's stoppable. The people, individuals are stoppable. And believe me, I don't think that President Trump is any fan of Bitcoin. I mean, he's an old school guy who believes in the dollar. He may believe in a gold standard, but he believes in the dollar. And we're beyond that. And the beyond it is not so much, well, there's a lot of the inherent properties of Bitcoin that are attractive. But once you start looking at digital money, some of the stuff we've been talking about, you're removing entirely unnecessary infrastructure of an old world. Look, I grew up in Amsterdam. The Netherlands is famous for a couple things. Drug production and transport being the top. In fact, all ecstasy pills are manufactured pretty much in the Netherlands. And they're a pass-through country. If you can get into the Netherlands, whether you're shipping drugs, diamonds, terrorism, whatever it is, you can transport your way to anywhere in Europe. And they're very low key about it because, you know, they run on all kinds, and I'm saying this with love, but they do run on all kinds of terrorism. So if you look at the cities, besides shipping in Rotterdam and just a little bit left in Amsterdam, and, you know, the obvious cheese, tulips, etc., it really comes down to the legal infrastructure. And particularly performing arts. And so again, arts. So that's why Google and Apple have the Dutch Irish reach around construction, whatever it's called. So all their royalties, they funnel through to the Netherlands. So you'll see the Rolling Stones have 5 huge office buildings on one of the most prestigious canals in Amsterdam. And there's, you know, 5 Google buildings next to it because they both deal in royalties. Because that's how the Google and Apple systems were set up. It's like, we're licensing our stuff to you, and that's a royalty. So we'll funnel the royalties through Holland. So they are masters at subverting the system and keeping money off the books. And that's what the Panama Papers revealed to us. And so, bro, we're not in the game. You and I are not players in their game. We're new players. And the new players have my daughter is now part of the Star Child generation. You know, these are the 25 to 30 year olds, and they have a whole another level of awareness and thinking, and it is much less materialistic. So we've already learned, you know, like, okay, you can kind of grind your ass all your life and you'll die and you had a great life, but the true satisfaction comes from doing other things. And I think that the human valve is creativity. You know, whether you're repairing a motorcycle or whether you're, you know, putting together a blockchain infrastructure, it's creative. And the tools that we have now, I mean, in podcasting booted up pretty quickly 16 years ago, man, we didn't have AWS buckets. We didn't have a GitHub. We didn't have the iPhone. We had no smartphones. Remember this, son? We had no iPhones. So the tools that we have to develop and communicate and connect are massively improved. So we can literally move at lightning speed these days. And, you know, but I did a Zoom call with Roy from Breeze Wallet an hour ago. He's in Israel. You know, it's like you couldn't
video chat real quick.
We had like crappy ass via satellite telephone connection. You know, yeah, we had email, but you couldn't do any video conferencing or any cheap voice over IP was a pipe dream. Yeah, we've heard of it. VoIP. Yeah, VoIP. That's the future. And it took, it took 15 years, but it got here finally. So we are in control. And that's what you see. That's what the protests around the world are about, for people who are organizing, who are rebelling against certain or all aspects of the control that's being exerted upon them. It's tumultuous, but it is also a great time to be alive, and perhaps the best time to be a podcaster.
Yeah, Yeah, I love it. And you know, I'm tend to be an optimist, and I constantly kind of go back and forth. Like the algorithm thing is like an interesting example, because like particularly when you become aware of it, it doesn't seem to like, I don't have much effect, I think, in the social media aspect of it, but it's fascinating. Like I use my VPN less for explicitly for privacy. Like, I mean, I do use it for that, but I also really just use it to find search results. I literally have to, if I'm looking for something specific, I will literally search it from like 3 or 4 different countries.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
to
sure.
Try to find it, because if sure. I'm in a different country, it'll give me a different story, which is really interesting how that's unfolding. And I kind of think of like social media algorithms in the same way. Is like you say, it's a, you know, a drug or conditioning. Is that like, if I could pick it, that would be really fascinating to be able to be like, I am just in this mood. Let me pick this algorithm and hunt for this type of
content. I mean, why wouldn't you have, that's the ultimate. We have different, you know, we've had apps that you can skin for years. Dark mode. Mm-hmm. Dark mode is all about an experience, you know? So give me dark mode algo, you know, give me the Morrissey algo, you know, now give me the Kool and the Gang algo. Yeah. That kind of stuff. Sure. Why not?
What do you think about technology in general, in that sense? Do you think technology is inherently a liberating force? Like I kind of tend to think we're in a constant, that we're in a trend toward decentralization. Like you talk about like the iPhone, podcasting, RSS feeds, email, like all these things are like massively decentralizing, but then like forces. But then you look at other things and you see how massively centralized some things, like right sitting right next to each other, are in the internet space, like Google and YouTube and Spotify, like, and all these things. So I tend to think it's a 2 steps forward, 1 step back sort of cycle, and that 2020 is definitely one of those 1 step back eras. But what do you think about that? Is that something you think technology is just ambiguous, you know, like, or is it inherently decentralizing or centralizing? Like what's your take on that?
Technology is just another language. I speak 2 languages fluently, English and Dutch. I can get by pretty well in German and French. They don't kick me out of Paris, but close to it. All the technology is just languages and language. And, you know, so if you take JavaScript, or if you take Perl or Python, you know, these are languages that people around the world speak. And when you speak the same language, you can collaborate. And out of that has come new languages that, you know, smaller groups started to speak, and they started to do stuff with that language. And then it became bigger. And, you know, and there's corporate languages like Go, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that crops up. But it truly is like Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just numbers. It's just a language. You know, it may feel like this wad of cash is being transported through a blockchain and pooped into your wallet, but of course you're just agreeing on a number, you know. So you can put that number in your pocket, you can swallow the piece of paper, you know, it's unstoppable. So in that sense, it is ubiquitous. But it's that's why when I hear politicians say, oh, learn to code, you know, yeah, everybody can speak the language, but not everybody is a poet, you know. And so we've got, this is poetry in motion. That's what it is. That's what technology is to me. And it can be used for anything, just as language can and should be.
The analogy to language is so fascinating to me, because it's almost like money, like code, like all of these things really just seem to be extensions of it. Like it is just like language at a different layer, you know? And the internet itself is just language attached to media. I'm listening to a book right now, The Information, I believe. And there's a fascinating story about how African tribes actually discovered a insanely long distance communication mechanism way before we did, like way before like the quote unquote Western world did. We didn't even realize it, because we didn't understand it, but like their drums, They would they would beat drums, and it was actually a language. They would share tones and ideas,
and they had a relay system built in. Everything.
It was fascinating. I had never heard this. Somebody recommended this book, and I'm like, it's been stuck in my brain.
That's the Iliad. You know, that's with the torches on the mountains. I mean, this is gone back for years. And you know what is it kicked off with Morse code, man. I mean, what is Morse code but just little language made out of blips and blops.
Yeah.
Technology has always been about communicating something somehow. And you get to communicate, you know, money is, and I agree with this, money is free speech.
Oh yeah.
And money is just pure free speech. So if, and let's just say value, what is something you value and you're willing to part with, it's all just language. You know, what is a dollar bill? It's just paper with words on it. Printed all fancy. But it's just another language. So,
But and it ends up being a certificate for how much you valued a thing in the past versus what you can get today. Like it's just a statement. It's a statement with skin in the game about your comparison.
Yeah.
You know?
So, today's generation, which is very comfortable with the idea of digital payments, will probably have to get some awakenings before they realize that this is not a great way to do it. So I went through my experiences early in life with the banking system being against me, you know, for whatever small reason. But, you know, once you see the power, you say, oh, you know, or once that direct deposit doesn't come in or something gets messed up and, you know, that'll be some experience. But the true freedom that it delivers just comes with a little bit of maturity. But the idea of having a wallet that transfers value from A to B, I think that's so ingrained. I think that this generation is good to go on that. We just need more reasons to do it. And that means, you know, at some point I got to be able to pay my rent in Bitcoin. That's going to be possible. It will be possible in some cases already. But, you know, we have to, once we get enough money in the system, then it just goes back and forth. That's what I like about Lightning. It just goes back and forth in channels, you know, and then whenever, you know, as long as if we can keep it in there and not have to go to fiat to make our purchases for living, then you got a system, man. And it's, as far as I understand it, pretty indestructible.
Yeah. Do you think this is like in your experience? I mean, like, I kind of love this, like, you know, usually when you get somebody who's not specifically developer in Lightning, they don't drop LSATs and Neutrino and, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, it's usually having to re-explain it over and over. Do you, in your experience, is this robust enough and scalable enough? Like, do you really see this as, like, what we will be using in 10 years? Like
Lightning specifically?
Yeah. Lightning specifically.
Because, I mean, for me, Bitcoin itself, just on the regular old mainnet, became a necessity for me with my daughter being in Rotterdam. She's in the creative field, so funds were running short for her during the lockdown. And, of course, you know, Daddy-O's here to help. But I got a little tired of the $75 wire fee, the three-day wait, you know, all this jazz, the lock on my account until it's gone. And so I said, you know, let's do this on Bitcoin. And she's complete from zero, got herself, and I did ask which company would be good for her in Europe, because the SEPA, S-E-P-A, is the general European financial network. So you can, as long as you have a wallet that's connected to that, then you can transfer to any bank account in the EU. So I got her set up and, you know, send her whatever she needed. And, you know, was there verified within 10 minutes or 15 minutes. That was a huge eye opener. And I'm like, okay, we're never doing this any other way. So that was one. The Lightning piece is what really enables, I would say this is second layer. And we've been looking at all these, all the altcoins, which have by default been second layer because you buy them with Bitcoin. At least in general. So that's all kind of second layer technology, but it has all of its issues, which we've seen throughout, you know, kind of the altcoin craze. And Lightning has yet to be proven. And I'm in particular interested how many simultaneous micropayments a single Raspi Blitz node can handle. I don't know yet, but you know, if I've got it, obviously it's not the amount of money, but if I have a 2,000 simultaneous HTLCs being performed, I don't know. So we'll see about the actual performance there. And now, of course, I have a large audience, which, you know, and when you release a podcast, a lot of stuff happens at the same time, which is quite interesting on bandwidth, et cetera, to see that, you know, when we push a terabit a second for like 20 minutes. Ooh. Oh, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And yeah, you know, it's that nuts. But for now, what I see, I mean, you just want instantaneous payments. You want super speed. Keysend enables the payment without an invoice, which is super sexy. I mean, that,
oh, yeah,
we didn't have that, you know. So I think that's almost as big as not having to copy and paste your RSS feed. You know, now you just, you know, I got this person's node ID. Here's your payment. You know, boom, done. So I think that adoption will be simple. Yeah. And, you know, as always, it's the onboarding. But is it really? I don't see that problem. It's just we need more stuff to do. So hopefully podcasting is broad enough, which I think it is, that, you know, that we can convert the 100 million United States podcast listeners. We can convert 1% of them to using a Bitcoin Lightning enabled podcast app. At $1 an hour, you're talking about $1 million that's flowing through the Lightning network on a daily basis. Yeah. Because that's what the number is: 100 million people listen in America, an average of 1 hour a day. So take 1% is 1 million people. Take 1 hour, that's $1 million. Take 1% of that for an app, that's $10,000 if you can run it all through your app. But the numbers add up real quick. And the machine works. That's what's so beautiful. I mean, as we've been talking, yeah, it's maybe 30 sats, but I got 30 sats, actually,
yeah,
more than that. And it's just flowing, and it makes you excited. You know, it doesn't matter that it's 10 cents. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I just need to get more people sending me 10 cents. That's all. That's a much different story than it's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so will that scale? Man, I sure hope so. But, you know, there's a lot of smart people involved. And there's also so many incentives within the native internal markets of Lightning. Now with Lightning Pool, where you can essentially, you know,
that's so exciting.
It's beyond crazy, because you're enabling people to use your money, yet your money never leaves you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's in,
you know, services without custody.
Exactly. Like, what? How does that even work? And that, of course, is because of the trust we can build with multi-sig and, you know, the cryptographic trust that we know that we're doing business appropriately with somebody. Mm-hmm. That by itself, if I ran a hedge fund, I'd be putting I got a lot of my money in it. I haven't installed the pool stuff yet, but I'm going to, because it seems like, well, I just got money sitting here on the node, mine as well. So that's so many reasons to bring in money and liquidity and networking and expand the graph and the routing, that to me, it seems like a no-brainer. And I say that because I'm not a smart super guy, but I can do some simple math. Like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. So anyone else who kind of looks at it will figure it out. And I think shows like yours, you know, it helps people understand and brings them along on this ride much more than any white paper can do or Twitter post. You know, I think this is the kind of stuff that helps people really get engaged, get involved, and start to understand. I mean, I had my personal Bitcoin guru, Dennis Parker, who just patiently sat with me for years and years and years. I never even met him, you know, DMing me stuff. And when I was really negative and like, this Bitcoin is bullshit, it's the beanie babies of money, get out of here. He just held steadfast, you know, and took me through that curve. And so I think that's what a lot of these podcasts do as well, is help people kind of get into it and flow and see the opportunities. And we'll have the next crazy ideas coming out of this.
Yeah. I certainly hope so. I mean, that's obviously the goal. That's one of the most interesting thing about like just podcasts in general, And I think that's why they're on the rise so much, is because one, particularly like in my experience, is that audio is now orders of magnitude the dominant way that I learn.
Sure.
Anything. But it also just allowed me to take so much time back. Like I listen when I inherently can't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the dishes, when I'm taking a ride, like to get breakfast, or like I double up all of my mindless tasks with learning.
So from a broadcast perspective, this mm-hmm. is what we call the drive phenomenon. So I was in radio, and radio is inherently local. And you talk about local issues, local weather, local news, and people listen to you at drive time, morning drive, afternoon drive, the two places where money is made in radio. Everywhere else is just a loss leader, or just a loss, not even a leader, a loss. So what podcasting did, and people develop a relationship with these personalities who are with them in the car, usually to work. That's how it worked. And your personality would become part of every human's experience in the morning. That's why lots of people would like to listen to, you know, stupid Z Morning Zoo. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Yeah, my dad was a Beatle. You know, this kind of crazy, nutty stuff. And other people, you know, I was in New York, and I had an hour and a half commute sometimes in the morning in the 80s, and I would listen to Stern. And Stern was, you know, against the man, and he was like, what the fuck is he going to say today? And how will the FCC be on his ass? And so you become involved in their life. And we have shifted the morning drive to the dish drive, you know, because that's funny you say that, because my wife is semi-retired, but, you know, when she's working, then we have a real seamless split of duties. And so I often am doing the bed, making up the bed and the dishes. And that is that's the best podcast time, because I can charge my phone. So it'll be charging, and it's near enough to, I got hearing aids, but they use BLE. So I can stream Bluetooth low energy straight to my hearing aids, that I can walk around all the house, and I'm doing that. And so that is my half hour drive time, that I have absolute time to listen to something with some form of peace, because I'm automatically doing the other things. Walking the dogs, driving is a great automatic thing we all do.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's actually, if anything, the value is, it is giving you more time to learn or to relax or to laugh or whatever it is while you're doing something else with your autonomous self.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really been like, I got my wife and my sister on it. And it's funny, like we'll take a day on like a Saturday or whatever, and like, it'll just be like, all right, we're going to do the whole house. Like I'll be working on the remodel, mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. going up and down with the shop, and I'll do the dishes and the laundry, and finally clean up all this crap out of the living room, because we got delivered 18 packages and all the boxes are still here. Like, and we're independently listening to stuff, and then we'll like kind of cross paths and we'll pause and be like, oh, did you know this thing? Like,
right. Yeah.
Well, have, like, yes, 2 or 3 yeah. minutes of sharing it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly. Well, I have the same experience with my wife. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's an epic thing to think that like this is all kind of brand new, like really in the grand scheme of things, like this is kind of magic from just
it's sorcery. It's complete sorcery. Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. It's magic tricks all over the place, and it's enriched people's lives, and it's brought people together. And what Joe Rogan is doing with long form interviews is such a literal breath of fresh air. And you see the machine pushing against him, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, well, we can't have that. We can't have people. It's like this whole Thanksgiving thing. Like, oh man, you can't test your way into Thanksgiving. So all we hear about for months is get a test before you go anywhere. And now it's like, you want to go somewhere? Well, a test isn't going to help. Dude, they don't want us to be happy. They don't want us to be with family and talk to people and figure the shit out. That's what's going on here. Don't congregate, you citizens. Stay at home. We need to stay apart to come together.
Dude, when Fauci was like, after that. Like my thinking is like, I don't trust the vaccine. I have no intention of taking a brand new vaccine with a brand new model, like something that's untested anytime soon. Nothing against vaccines, but like, this just seems really reckless right now. But then when Fauci recently just made this statement or whatever, that even if you get a vaccine, you're still going to have to social distance and wear a mask, and you're not going to be able to hang out with people in any groups. It'd be like,
what's the point?
Why would I go get the vaccine then? Like, yeah, literally, well, why?
They're moving the goalposts because now this vaccine, which is an mRNA messaging RNA, which tells your DNA to do something, may be, this is the CRISPR stuff. I mean, we're on the cusp of some, and actually the company that's really doing the Pfizer stuff, I think Moderna's bullshit, but I don't think the technology is like that crazy. Just has never really been proven at such scale. They may be onto something for personalized medicine. That's what BioNTech does, is they create personal cancer medication based upon your DNA. So, and believe me, there's a reason why 23andMe and all these companies were there. Everyone's going to get recommendations for your personal shot that is going to protect you from all evils of the world. May be great, I don't know. This particular exercise is, and I do believe that this has been premeditated. There's enough evidence for it with, the war games that Harvard or Harvard Medical School did, the Bloomberg Harvard Medical School in New York with the 102 exercise, which is exactly for this, for a coronavirus. They ran it only a few months before the actual thing happened. And what you're
are you serious?
Oh yes. What was it called? Man, Section 102 or, oh yeah. No, they war game this whole thing. And it's all the usual suspects, and there's enough evidence that all this also goes back to the AIDS epidemic, in the 80s, which I lost a lot of people, friends of mine. What happened is they were diagnosed, they went into the hospital, never came out because they were treated there with a rejected, chemotherapy drug, AZT. And that's what killed people, in my opinion. I'm not a doctor, but in my opinion. We have a pandemic based upon a polymerase chain reaction, which is PCR, which is not a test. It's not intended to be a test. It's an identifier. It's an amplification of some DNA to see if you can find a shred of anything. So I think we're probably looking at a high 90% false positive rate, which is just scaring the shit out of people. We've been, particularly young people, have been shamed into, well, if you fucking breathe anywhere, you could be killing grandma. Literally. How many times after you don't want an empty chair at Thanksgiving table next year because you didn't wear a mask. Now, this is terrorism. And they're going to try, we'll see, they're going to try to wrap it all up with an app. And we had Qantas Airlines this morning announced that as soon as they're back up and truly flying a lot of people back and forth, international travelers will have to have a proof of vaccination, and it will come in the form of an app that you have to present while boarding, but probably while ticketing. We've heard, I have a disagreement with my co-host Dvorak about this, but there's the door.
Ticket package.
Yes, Ticketmaster announced that they would be doing this for their venues. He doesn't believe it. I do. I think that it'll either be you've been tested or you've been vaccinated, and that will be, you will need some kind of what they're calling a health passport being implemented everywhere. I mean, it's not, this is part of the Great Reset. And I fully expect, just to make it more messed up, I fully expect some kind of cyber event to take place as well. And I think that's when Bitcoin may be very important. But in general, they'll do anything for control. It sounds so conspiratorial, but I've been living this. I've been seeing it. It's so clear. Just listen to the Great Reset podcast. I mean, just listen to what they're actually saying, and they're talking about.
I've actually been
all
meaning to
stuff.
Do that.
Yeah, it, it's kind of good. You know, they got the abbreviated version, which is like 20, 30 minutes each episode, but they're all in there. And all the bankers, all the central bankers, the policy people. And it's what better way to control people than with health?
Yeah.
It's so good. You back it up by controlling their money. You know, it's like you, and now it's been positioned as if you don't wear a mask, you're probably going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And there's such a shame. I mean, I couldn't believe I heard Marco from Overcast say that he had gotten COVID and he was ashamed. He was ashamed because, yeah, he had clearly not followed the rules or done something wrong, because only stupid people, i.e. Republicans, get COVID. That's the messaging that is being sent. Just look, turn on the TV. It's like, oh, Republican super spreader event. Oh, left wing protest. Release valve. You know, whatever. It's like, it's all the same. So turn off your televisions, turn on your podcasts, load up your Bitcoin wallet. We're getting ready for the next century.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I am on board with that. You know, so I'm not sure how loud this is. Hopefully it's not too bad.
Doesn't bother me.
Okay, good. I'm curious. First, we could not need Bitcoin and Lightning and these tools and stuff more than like right now. It's almost a little bit, it seems serendipitous in many ways, but I'm more inclined to think it's just, I love the idea that it's serendipitous, but I'm more inclined to think it's just kind of when all the pressures converge, you know, you build things. What is it? Innovation is the mother of necessity, or whatever.
Necessity maybe is the mother of invention.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm curious on like, what do you think the timeline of this is? Like, how quick do you think, it still blows my mind sometimes that smartphones are only really 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when I think, oh, 5 years out, there's no way. But then I stop and be like, smartphones are only 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And so like kind of what do you have a timeline for this? Do you have like a perspective on how you think something like this could flood in and how these factors like the Great Reset contribute to it?
Well, I think we're coming down to an important moment. I personally believe that President Trump is trying to expose some, if not a number of criminal networks. And he'll probably try to do that whether he is reelected or not. I think Sidney Powell, who I have high respect for, have read at least one of her books. I'm familiar with the Arthur Andersen case and Enron that she was involved in. I am very familiar with the General Flynn legal case. And I think without doubt, we can say there was no Russian collusion. So this is a network that created this illusion, the Russian illusion, and presented that to us. And that's a lot of people right there. So once we start exposing that, if it can be done, you know what this is? It's the Great Reset versus the Great Awakening. It's very possible that the Great Reset, which is also Build Back Better, be on the lookout for that term. It's used by every world leader everywhere now, including Joe Biden, Boris Johnson, François Macron, Mark Rutte in the Netherlands. It's the prime minister in New Zealand. They're all talking about Build Back Better. And this is a globalist plan to really enslave everybody, have them on some kind of universal basic income, which we're very close to right now. That's what these payments are all about. This is why the central banks want to create the central bank digital coin. FedNow is a real project that's slated for 2023. The real reason for that, of course, is to have better control, not only to be able to pay citizens directly to keep them at home and, you know, keep them being a resource recycling machine. You know, it's like push money in, go buy something, rinse, repeat, do it again. To just basically be used as an audience for all products of the world. That's what their plan is for the U.S. to continue to move manufacturing offshore. That could very well kick in. That could very well take place. It's only a few. 2023 is close. I don't think any of the other CBDCs will be far behind if they're not maybe a little bit ahead of that. And that's the base I'm looking at. If you control that, if you control people's money to that degree, then you control the world. People will need some proof in front of their eyes to believe that they've been duped. If you just want to get a taste of how long this has been going on, listen to any George Carlin stand-up routine. He has been talking about, well, he was talking about this for years and years and years. So it is truly a great awakening that we learn of the control and the just evil douchebaggery that's been taking place to take advantage of us. And it's at every scale, every level. Wars being the biggest one, war. It's a racket. We actually send our children to go die for bankers, but we dress it in a flag and do all kinds of other stuff.
It could feel real good.
Yeah.
Before everybody dies.
Which is really cynical, about taking someone's patriotism and converting it into killing for your own personal benefit. But that's always what's been going on with war. Just people get taught differently. And that's one more thing, I'm sorry, is education. We are now seeing, hold on a second. Not only is the educational system crap, they really don't care about my children at all, at all, at all, at all. They have way many, the teachers' unions have problems that have nothing to do with the children. What are they learning now that parents are seeing this crap at home on Zoom? They're like, what? No, 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 no. So education, that's where it's going to start probably. And that's the best place to start. In my mind, take your kid out of school, homeschooling, there's tons of clubs and resources and people you can figure out how to do that with, and give your kid your old laptop and a Linux distro CD and tell them to set it up and install a web server and then get back to you. Because teach them those little skills, teach them that, a web server can be on your own personal laptop, that you can run your own email, that you could set up, you can download the Mastodon software and set it up on a laptop and pop some ports open and have your buddies on it. This is the stuff kids should be learning. So we're teaching them shit. We're probably indoctrinating them. And a country that cannot survive when you teach its children to hate the country. And I think a lot of that has been going on.
Yeah. Man, don't even get me started on education. That's
actually where we have to start, probably. That's the best place. Teach them some Bitcoin, man. Teach them what's really going on. Don't give them the crap. It's like, and this is human nature, guy. AOL, it was a huge success story. America Online, and people got email, and they had places to talk, and you had information sources. And then at the gates of AOL, people were just like, "Hey, what's that internet thing out there? We hear that's all the cool shit, porn. That's all the cool shit out there. We want to get to. Hey, AOL, we want the cool shit." And then AOL went, "Okay, we'll give you a little browser here. But it's not, careful, your mileage may vary. You could get hurt out there on the scary internet." And within a few years, AOL was no longer an information provider. They were a dial-up provider. People just use them to get straight to the internet. People want that. They want the unknown. They want the scary. And I think children should be taught that that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how many problems stem from the inherent control in money. Back to an earlier point, I was just talking about how I tend to be an optimist. In this day and age, I have to admit, without Bitcoin, without Lightning, without this movement, and without all the people who seem to see things kind of with this same framework of we really need to be independent. We need to explore and take risks and go out there and why are you watching the news? This whole mentality seems to be really wrapped up in Bitcoin and is spreading it very quickly. I know people who were totally on the other side of this thing. And I was absolutely.
I was too.
And then came into this space and then kind of looked back and it was like, oh crap, that's a shit show. Like I'm not going back there. And I'd have a really hard time being optimistic about the future without it right now. But I gotta say, one of the things about Lightning so far is that there hasn't really been a unique experience. The tools itself have been fascinating. The technology is fascinating, but we've been in a bootstrapping phase for a long time.
Years.
Like getting the, well, long time in Bitcoin. Feels like
It's
been like 2 years. That's not that long. But we've been in the get KeySend to work, get LNAuth to work, like sort of stuff, just the real key tools.
Sure.
And I've been finally using it a lot with just Fold and Strike, just being able to buy gift cards and get like a discount. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, this podcasting thing that you're heading off and that Paul is working on with Sphinx and stuff, this is the first thing that I have been using regularly now and getting really excited about, that I don't stop and think. It takes me a little bit to think like I'm actually using Lightning and Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I'm doing it because it's a new thing to do rather than an excuse to use Lightning. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I think you forget about it too. Like you're just in this app and you know there's money flowing. I'm doing this and I feel good about it and there's sats flowing and everybody's winning. I mean, it's, you don't even think about that anymore. Now, do you have a tribe on Sphinx?
Yeah. It's the Bitcoin Audio Knots.
Do you have your podcast in there?
Yeah. I got my podcast in there. Just added it the other day.
Do you have the Bitcoin? Do you have it Lightning enabled?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Good.
Oh yeah. I've got it all running. I just need to get on the pod. Yeah. The index.
Right.
To see if I can just migrate my RSS feed and do something.
Well, all you have to do is do the Podcaster wallet and then don't choose the Sphinx option. Just choose the, I have a node. And then post whatever node you want in there, and then it works. Then you go back into your tribe, and you can add your RSS feed in the tribe settings. There's an app URL and a feed URL. Just put your RSS feed there, and right away Sat start streaming. And let me know because I'll start streaming them too.
All right. Oh yeah, man. Well, I got to say, this has been awesome and an honor.
Oh, it's been great fun, man. I've been looking forward to this. And thank you for being patient with me. I had a lot of incoming requests. And so I'm just trying to schedule it all a little bit.
Perfectly understandable. Yeah. when somebody gets hard into Bitcoin, or when Bitcoiners find out that Adam Curry, of all people, is running a Lightning node and decides to use Neutrino and like is dropping all the technical.
No, man. LSAT. Like, I said it. I dropped an LSAT or two.
Hell yeah. This is awesome. I'm going to be following this thing like crazy. I've been listening to podcasting 2.0 in the app. In fact, it's quickly becoming like my main one, except for the fact that I don't have all the tribes, but you,
right.
TFTC, Asus, I'm not sure if he's actually adding his Bitcoin & Co. Like I've started listening to this. I'm kind of now using this.
Spread the word about about podcasterwallet.com, because for people who are already on Sphinx, it's great. I mean, it's going to take a while before we have more apps. You know, we've got a whole bunch of, it's actually newpodcastapps.com is where we've listed. We're just starting to build this list. That's all the apps that have come out of podcastindex.org and what they support. We don't have the Lightning stuff on there yet, but you know, as I said, I think Breeze will come out with a podcast enabled wallet or app. That's going to be huge, because then we can scale. Then we can see what we can really do, because you know, what's it going to be? You got 1,000 people start listening at the same time. What the hell is going to happen? I can't wait to break it. I mean,
I want to break it. I want to break it.
Then at least we learn something. You know, then hey, wait a minute. What do we need to do? And then we'll have another data point. So that kind of stuff is, you know, imagine like crowdfunding that kicks off right away and that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people start paying. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'm going to learn about lock times and HTLCs and all this. I see that in my future. And I look forward to it. You know, I look forward to the mayhem.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But I appreciate you taking the time and your thoughtful questions, actually. Nice conversation.
Appreciate it, man. Dude, thank you so much. And maybe we'll do it again when we're doing this on 3.0 or dropping out some really big improvements and we get that flood of a million new people and it breaks and then we get to talk about it.
I look forward to it, man. I look forward to breaking stuff with you.
Awesome, man. Dude, okay. Thank you so Take much. Care. Take it easy.
All right. A huge thank you to Adam Curry for coming on the show and for being a major proponent for Bitcoin and for directing so many people to Sphinx and his podcasting 2.0 project, which you can actually get if you're on Sphinx or any like integrated app. Check it out on, you can go to podcasterwallet.com. But I'll have links to all of these, all the things that he mentioned in the show so that you can check those out in the show notes. But check out Podcasting 2.0, where they really kind of dig into a lot of this stuff even deeper, specifically about Lightning and what they're doing with this project. And those websites that you can get to are podcastindex.org, podcasterwallet.com, and newpodcastapps.com. Again, they'll be in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize them. But if you're looking them up right now, hopefully that helps. Another major thank you to our wonderful sponsors, Bitbox, the minimal, sleek, exactly what you need open source hardware wallet that I really am just a huge fan of. And of course, Hexa Wallet, the mobile wallet that has built-in batching, because I can't believe nobody else has built-in batching. Still blows my mind that this is the only one that does this. But Hexa is a great wallet. You can find both of those at guyswan.com/hexa or guyswan.com/bitbox. With that, we will close this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on the Apple App Store. That really does make a huge difference. And if you do it, I'll love you forever. Thank you to my patrons and everybody in the Telegram and Sphinx tribe. It's been awesome hanging out with everybody, and I'll be back with another Bitcoin Audible read tomorrow. And until then, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.